This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. The United States consumes 45% of the gasoline produced on Earth, about 20 million barrels a day. Currently, for every 15 gallons we pump, Saudi Arabia receives $2.25. In Secrets of the Kingdom, Posner reveals a Saudi strategy born of long-standing fear of a possible attack on their life's blood, their oil fields. No matter who the perpetrator, an assault against the Saudis' most vulnerable Abqaiq oil processing facility, 24 miles inland from the north end of the Gulf of Bahrain, would slow Saudi oil exports by about a third of what the U.S. uses daily. Secrets of the Kingdom tells that the field at Abqaiq and many other sites have been mined with radiation dispersal devices, or RDDs, perhaps better known as dirty bombs. But wait, what if America and all other gas guzzlers out there suddenly got alternative fuel religion? A sort of alternative economic attack on the Saudi oil fields? Back to Kathy and Gerald Posner.
So if Jeb Bush doesn't make it to the White House and some environmentalist gets in at some point and we start to tilt towards biodiesel and all sorts of things, then what happens to the relationship?
Well, you know, then it's very interesting because here we are talking about these very mercenary capitalists, the House of Saud. They clearly are not dumb. They realize that they have a world right now that runs on, you know, these fossil fuels, and therefore they have the largest reserves and untapped reserves, undiscovered reserves, probably anywhere on the planet. They can continue to push them out for decades and decades to come. But if you really did have a president get into the White House and he or she said, you know what, we're going to change the dependence of this country and we're going to look at alternative forms of energy, I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't have Saudis like Al Waleed and other major investors investing in those very companies. They're going to cover their bases. You know, it's a bit like the individuals who own stocks and then they buy a couple of small options or whatever in case the market goes down to cover their loss or that. And here, the Saudis, I believe, would be some of those investing in those alternative energy companies so that they weren't left out in the cold. I'd be shocked if they were not.
You're right.
When I was surprised at the 9/11 reports, say, you know, kid glove handling of the Saudis, once I did the book, I was no longer surprised at it. And what I mean by that is it just turns out to be par for the course for the way that we've dealt with them seemingly, you know, for decades. I understood that they always had a special relationship with us because of oil, but I greatly underestimated the extent to which it had allowed them to get away with things that we really wouldn't have allowed any other country to do. And, you know, just recently, I mean, I think of this, 40 or 50% of the suicide bombers in Iraq, it turns out, are Saudis, right? That's the latest count, the actual body count on those who are blowing themselves up, ranging from a 13-year-old boy to a Saudi doctor. They're crossing the border. They're getting revved up at these Friday mosque sermons, and they're going across the border to kill the crusader. In one instance, in Mosul, in the mess hall, the one that killed the most Americans, the Saudi cook that blew himself up had a diplomatic passport. His father's a diplomat, and he carried a diplomatic passport. Could you imagine what the Bush administration would be doing if 40 or 50% of the suicide bombers were Iranian or Syrian, and the one that had killed the most Americans in a barrack had a Syrian or Iranian diplomatic passport? We would be pounding the table from the administration and saying, this has to stop. We'd be rattling the swords. But with the Saudis, most Americans don't even know about it. So it just goes to show that, you know, they just have a relationship with us that is quite infuriating to me in that they get away with things and they have done it for decades.
Gerald, the book is remarkable. Thank you again for being with us today. Gerald Posner.
Thanks so much.
Somehow indelibly embedded in our culture is the notion that those who speak against dependence on finite fossil fuels, primarily oil, and talk up viable alternatives, biodiesel, hybrid engines, wind, solar, etc., are tree-hugging, earth-shoe-wearing, tie-dye t-shirted utopians who believe in a future fueled by Willy Wonka's Oompa Loompas racing on Ritalin in oversized hamster wheels. Well, this bulletin will knock those folks for a loop. Willie Nelson, yeah, I said Willie Nelson, has gone into partnership with Texas-based biodiesel distributor Distribution Drive. The new company will supply blended biodiesel fuel to 169 truck stops across Texas and Oklahoma. The name of the new fuel? BioWillie. Take That, Dick Cheney, with your secret energy summit. Smart Power, a three-year-old nonprofit, is marketing clean energy sources on the basis that they will make good economic sense. Biodiesel can be made for about 50 cents per gallon. It's clean burning, biodegradable, and can be used in any compression or diesel engine. And since at the projected rate of use, there's only enough oil underground to carry the planet for about another 50 to 60 years, and there's only enough oil under Anwar in Alaska to fuel the U.S. for about a year and a half, it's probably about time we wake up and smell the vegetable oil. Kathy Golden talks with Dr. David Morris, Vice President of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance.
I'm speaking today with Dr. David Morris, who's the Vice President of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Doctor, I gassed up yesterday, and I think I paid something like $2.60 a gallon. Do you recall an article written by Fareed Zakaria? Imagine 500 miles per gallon. And he wrote about the fact that the technology exists right now that could be used. The solution is already here. That with hybrid technology, the latest semiconductors and flexible fuel tanks that would allow for 15% petroleum and 85% ethanol or methanol, we could actually get 500 miles per gallon of fuel.
Yes, I did. I have to say with no undue modesty that 18 months before that column, I came out with a report that detailed each one of those steps. And people can go up to the website, newrules.org, and scroll down and just download. It's called A Better Way to Get From Here to There. And it's a strategy that relies on hybrid vehicles and plug-in hybrid vehicles so you can use the electricity from the grid system to charge their batteries, flexible fueled cars and biofuels. His 500 miles per gallon is not true, but it's, you know, maybe 150 to 180 miles per gallon, which is perfectly acceptable. But basically, what comes out of the federal government is a strategy that is based on a hydrogen future, and it's actually a hydrogen nuclear future because they'll build nuclear power plants which will generate the electricity that will electrolyze the water, and the hydrogen will go into our fuel cell cars. And, you know, I'm not much for a nuclear-powered future no matter what, but it does seem to me that if they're willing to entertain the notion of a hydrogen economy, then that means that they, and when I say they, I mean politicians, which are willing to entertain a strategy that would require us to change everything. I mean, everything. We would have to change the kind of fuel we use, the way it's produced, the way it's distributed, the way it's stored. We'd have to change the cars we use, the design of the cars, the design of the gas stations. I mean, that's bold, my goodness. So what I'm suggesting is that if you're thinking at that bold a level, then why not achieve the same result, which is 100% displacement of our petroleum use for transportation, with a strategy that costs less than 1% and can be done 30 to 40 years sooner, and that relies on current technology. Now, a hybrid car, people tend to want because it tends to be more efficient, and certainly it is, but the major breakthrough, it seems to me, for a hybrid car is that it provides two propulsion systems, the electric motor or electricity or by the engine. And then if you take a hybrid car and allow it to be plugged in, which right now it can't be, but it wouldn't be a minor adjustment so that it can be plugged into the electric grid system, you then have a car which could run primarily on electricity and, in fact, entirely on electricity in urban areas. And then you've reduced the amount of fuel that you need for your engine by about 70% to 80%, and that then makes ethanol and biofuels appropriate as a primary fuel. They can't be a primary fuel if we have our current, you know, gasoline consumption habits. There's just not enough land area that's available for that. But they could be if electricity was our primary fuel. So all the pieces are there, and in fact, they may be coming together now in the popular press, I hope.
I've become very interested recently in biodiesel, and I can't remember where I was when I heard this, but somebody was talking about ways in which biodiesel could be made from just vegetable oil and other byproducts and things. And I started fantasizing about somebody going around at night after a business day and collecting all the junk that comes out of Burger King's and Wendy's and McDonald's and turning it into fuel, you know? Tell me a little bit about biodiesel.
Well, it's true. You can. I mean, biodiesel is an unfortunate name. Unfortunately, I would just call it vegetable oil, because it's vegetable oil that you put through another chemical process, and you get it to the point where it can be used as a mixed with a diesel fuel. So they call it biodiesel because it's a mixture, but it's a little confusing because then you have to figure out, well, how much of a percentage is mixed. So there's biodiesel 2%, biodiesel 5%, biodiesel 20%, biodiesel 100%. In fact, in Minnesota next year, by mandate, all trucks will have to use 2% vegetable oil in their diesel. It's worthwhile to have. It certainly is a useful market, but there is a but here, and the but is that we really don't have a whole bunch of vegetable oil available to make this happen. Ethanol is alcohol, and it comes from fermenting sugars, and you can get sugars from virtually anything. Vegetable oils is more difficult to get, and so yes, it's true that you can go and round these waste oils from your fast food restaurants and the like. When you rounded up every last drop of that, you may be able to produce enough for a quarter of a percent of our diesel needs. Now, of course, in this country, our diesel needs are in commercial vehicles and in trucks. But in Europe, 50% of their cars are diesel, and so they're actually undertaking a biodiesel program, which is focused on their passenger cars. I think that what happened was in the 1970s, we were hit with two oil shocks. We also had a liberal majority in Congress, and we had a president, Jimmy Carter, who came from an energy background and also was very interested in the subject. So, you know, that combination moved us into the forefront in the world in solar cells, in wind turbines, in efficient cars and the like. And then when Ronald Reagan came in, he literally abandoned all of those programs, both regulatory programs and direct funding programs. The only thing that remained were some incentive programs there. So we went through sort of a 10-year of eclipse. And then when Bill Clinton came in, we did a little bit in terms of coming back, but really his focus was not on energy or environmental policy. So, you know, we're sort of almost 25 years after the last time that we had a major effort. And now when we talk about a national energy policy from the Bush administration, it's coal and nuclear and gas and oil and hydrogen. And you can get hydrogen from all of those other technologies. So it's not like the renewable energy efficiency, decentralization, cutting-edge technologies that were national policy in the 1970s.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. David Morse.
Thank you.
Do you think Americans can beat their addiction to foreign oil? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Gerald Posner and David Morris are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. You heard music today by Charles Pierce. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guests, please go to our program's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.